How long?
Pataga stood on the knoll overlooking Cahokia Creek. While the plants closest to the water thrived, the brush lining the terrace had shriveled in the merciless heat. It was dust-coated and a sickly green. The goosefoot grass and knotweed looked as forlorn as the cornfields. With the slow brightening of day, the mist evaporated, leaving the swarm of warriors clearly visible. Men and women slogged across the shallow water to challenge Badgertail's forces, who had dug in on the opposite bank in front of the northern palisade wall. Arrows glinted in pale streaks, arcing from the shooting platforms, rising from the ground. Above them, the temple gleamed with a gaudy brilliance.
Are you in there, Theron? Well, you won't be for long.
We'll have them by nightfall, I think.
When will we send in our axe teams?
Once we have the creek drainage, the bank will provide a safe place for our warriors to shoot from. Then we'll start aiming at anyone who dares show his face above the palisade wall. When they're too frightened to stand up and shoot, we'll move.
Pataga paced the knoll. To distract himself from the gnawing anxiety in his gut, he dreamed of what he would do when they'd won. It wouldn't be the way Alota and Gopher had thought. Pataga would make sure that things didn't fall apart. He would reorganize the villages. Cahokia's elite would no longer run things. He would pick better people, but who they would be, he didn't know. Nightshade would know. Nightshade knew everything. Oh, how he longed to see her, to talk with her again and share his hopes. Once things had settled down, he would ask her to journey into the underworld and tell First Woman that they had won the war and killed the wicked Sun Chief. Ask her to beg First Woman's forgiveness for whatever offenses Theron had committed. Surely First Woman would agree to talk to Mother Earth again so that the crops would flourish next cycle. But Pataga dreaded the time until then. All around him, wilted cornfields lay untended, the stalks barely tall enough to reach his knees. The harvest would be dismal. He had no idea how he would feed the people this winter. They would have to conserve, to ration food very carefully. So many people had fled. He could send teams to collect from their now untended fields, but he would have to move fast to keep the crops from the raccoons, mice, and crows. Yes, it could be done.
No!
Pataga spun around and stared at the palisades. Flaming arrows lit fiery paths through the sky before they landed in the dry vegetation above the creek and burst into flame.
I hadn't thought he'd resort to this so early in the battle. Why?
Theron ordered it. He's trying to drive us mad so we'll make a mistake. Well, he can't.
The fire bloomed into an orange monster that drove his warriors back from the creek. Men and women flooded wildly into the cornfields, watching in horror as the flames rose higher.
The fool! Theron is destroying himself. Surely he knows I'll flay him for this.
It's not Theron. It's Badgertail. And he knows exactly what he's doing. The more he hurts us, the more time he can buy, and the longer he holds out, the more we'll want the battle over. He's driving a harder bargain for his survivors.
Well, he won't get it.
My chief, I think we found a use for the Hornspoon Clan. If we don't put out those fires before they reach the fields...
Yes, blessed Father, Son. Order them to dig a fire line with their hose and start water baskets moving from the creek to the fields. Hurry, hurry!
Hailcloud dashed down the knoll to speak to one of his warriors, and Pataga shook his fists in rage. Black smoke billowed into the blue sky. Moments later, Father Son's yellow face had changed to a dark, glaring crimson. Wanderer blinked the stinging sweat out of his eyes and forced himself to concentrate as he began to lift the circlet of bone out of Lycan's skull. He had barely moved it before the underlying tissue tugged back.
Quickly, Vol, hand me that knife.
Vol fumbled before her trembling hand could place the blade in Wanderer's bloody fingers. Her round face was pale and drawn. Wanderer exchanged a confident look with her and paused, mustering strength. Chips of marrow-pink bones scattered the area around Wanderer, along with gore-encrusted knives, strips of coughgrass root, cactus blossoms, and the crimson-filled bowl in which he had been rinsing out his cloths. The murky smells of herbs and blood mixed cloyingly with the smoke that rode the wings of the hot wind. Wanderer's nostrils flared as he lowered the knife and slipped the tip beneath the circlet of skull. Exhaustion made his hands shake so badly that he had to brace the base of his palms on Lycan's head to steady them. With the delicacy of a shell-gorget artist, He carved the bone away a bit at a time. When at last it came loose, the bloody tissue bulged through the hole like a swelling bubble. Vol put a hand to her trembling lips in an effort to still them, but tears rose in her eyes. Wanderer sagged forward and heaved a relieved breath.
They're leaving. Can you feel it? The evil spirits are going.
Yes, I can feel it.
Wanderer leaned back and stretched his aching muscles. His shoulders had been on fire for three hands of time. Sweat trickled in cold drops down the middle of his back, gluing his red shirt to his flesh.
What should we do now? Sew the flap of skin back over the hole?
Not yet. Let's give the spirits a little longer to escape.
Wanderer's gaze drifted over Lycan's pale face, and his ribs seemed to shrink like wet rawhide strips, constricting painfully around his heart. She looked so frail and helpless.
How are you doing in the underworld, my daughter? I pray that Birdman is helping you.
Wanderer laid a hand on her arm and closed his eyes. He gathered every shred of strength that remained in his body and concentrated on pouring it into Lycan.
Vol, help me.
He knew the instant that Vol began infusing her strength, it felt like a warm tide. As Lycan ran headlong through the dense underbrush, Birdman danced his pursuit, spinning and leaping, his wings outspread so that the feathers brushed the ground. Starlight coated his body until each feather shimmered like liquid silver.
No! Birdman, why are you doing this?
The night grew thicker, the cold heavier. Like sharp quills, the chill penetrated her green dress, pricking at her skin. A thick root grabbed at Lycan's foot, and she stumbled into a red cedar tree and caught her balance, clinging to the worm-chewed bark while her knees trembled. The girth of the tree was enormous. Its branches stretched so high into the sky that they vanished amid the stars. In awe, Lycan stared upward.
First woman's tree?
Shadows flicked through the forest around her. Every so often she would catch sight of a mask, just a glimpse of jasper or shell beads.
Do you know why owls die with their wings outspread, little one?
Lycan spun, and she saw him perched on the branches of the towering cedar over her head. He had tucked in his wings and bent forward to peer down at her, like a vulture waiting for a wounded deer to die. His snakeskin belly glittered with the majesty of crushed mica.
Because they never give up and close their wings!
Birdman's black eyes gleamed as though from an inner fire. He shifted on the branch, stepping back and forth as he began to dance again. Old needles cascaded out of the tree with each stamp of his feet. Lycan watched the needles twirl through the air in black flashes before they settled on the ground.
Why, Lycan? Why won't they give up?
They know that flight is their only hope of survival.
Six ghostly forms shuffled out from among the shadowed trunks of oak, hickory, and cedar. Some wore bushy-headed masks of beautifully woven corn husks. Others had animal masks, with upcurving horns of buffalo, deer, and elk. The seashells on their leggings glittered extravagantly in the starlight streaming down between the overarching branches. Through the enormous sockets of their eyes, only blackness showed, empty, ominous, with no glint of life. Lycan shrank back against the cedar trunk as they closed in around her. The dancers extended their hands and began throwing cornmeal at her. It netted her hair and stuck to her bare arms and legs.
What are you doing?
She knew that cornmeal purified and sanctified the way for power, but she did not understand why they were throwing it on her. Then, just as suddenly, the dancers shuffled backward and opened their hands to Birdman. They danced slowly around Lycan, lifting each moccasined foot and holding it suspended before bringing it down. Starlight gilded their red and black robes. They leaped into the air, looking at Lycan through those hollow eye sockets, and her soul shriveled.
Will you give up, Lycan, or will you fly for your people?
I want to fly, Birdman! I've always wanted to!
Birdman dove out of the tree, his sharp talons reaching for her. He knocked her to the ground and clamped his talons around her chest in the manner of eagle catching chipmunk.
Birdman, no! You're supposed to be my spirit helper!
Her arms and legs flailed weakly, while his talons tightened and her ribs cracked. Sharp darts of pain shot through her. Birdman lowered his head, staring into Lycan's terrified eyes.
Didn't I tell you that sometimes Owl longs with all his heart to be Snake so he can crawl into a hole and hide in the darkness? This is what he's hiding from.
A gray haze fluttered at the edge of Lycan's vision. She struggled, trying to escape Birdman's grip. But with a wrench, he sank his claws deeper into her flesh, and his huge beak dropped out of the gray to tear at her chest and arms. She felt her flesh being torn from her bones as he devoured her. Birdman's beak opened and plunged for her eyes. The last of her body began sliding down his throat into his stomach.
Oh, First Woman, I tried so hard. Wanderer? Wanderer, I'm sorry.
Eternal night enveloped her. Lycan's soul separated from her body and sank into the pool of her own blood.
The one life, it's all a dance, and you have to feel its motions before you can understand it.
The pool of blood began to sway, rocking Lycan back and forth in time to the drumbeat. It washed over her and filled her with warmth. The fluid motions of the dance seeped into her soul. She began to float with them.
Free yourself. Move with the sounds. Dream this world away. It doesn't exist. Nothing exists but the dance.
Lycan danced, dipping and swaying. Like mist dispersing beneath a hot sun, her soul faded, growing thinner and thinner, blending with the dance itself until it melted into the blackness. And from that nothingness came light. As though Birdman had opened his beak, a stream of gold flooded down through an opening above. It filled her with a bright glow, and Lycan reached for the warmth, but her fingers were different. Like wings, they prickled as though circulation had just been restored. Frail dreamer's wings strengthening, growing. She shook herself, and white bits of down fell away, revealing brown speckled feathers. Lycan spread her wings and soared upward. The opening above acted as a lure. It was round and so brilliant that it hurt her eyes. She flew out into a vast sea of amber sky. Clouds twisted and tumbled in the high winds. Lycan tested her wings, diving and sailing on the warm air currents, feeling the way that each feather affected her flight when she flapped or flexed her tail. A heron, formed from the gold filaments of sky, stepped lithely across the puffs of clouds ahead, as though walking on the rocks in a stream.
So, you found me.
Are you First Woman?
That's what your people call me. And yes, I was there at the beginning of this spiral.
I need to talk to you.
The heron cocked its head, and a curious glint sparked in its eyes.
Well, come on, child. You've earned the right to talk. Come and sit with me and we'll discuss it. But don't think you're going to convince me. For thousands of cycles, I've watched humans. Part of my soul died with the last mammoth calf. Another part went with giant beaver. When sloth and horse were hunted down and slaughtered, the last bit of my sympathy for humans died too. Mother Earth will be better off without people.
No, First Woman, no!
Lycan flew closer, thinking about Wanderer and her mother, and about Orenda, who had bravely tried to save her. They would die if First Woman wouldn't listen to her. And Flycatcher might already be dead, starved because of the drought, or killed because people were hungry enough to slaughter each other for a basket of corn. They rolled around the sky like muted thunder, echoing from every shred of cloud. Reluctant sadness entered First Woman's eyes. Lycan tipped her wings back and softly lighted on the golden-hued puff of cloud where First Woman stood.
Elkhorn!
Badgertail flattened himself on the shooting platform as another volley of arrows lanced up from the creek drainage. A crowd huddled in the plaza below. People didn't dare stay in their houses. They didn't know when Pataga would resort to firing the thatched roofs, but they knew he would do it. Badgertail could not stop thinking about Locust. He didn't know where she was, though certainly she and Primrose would have left his house by now. Only Wanderer and Vol remained in the temple, because they were afraid to move Lycan. The last time Badgertail had run through the dark halls in search of Nightshade, he had checked on Lycan and found the little girl near death, her heartbeat erratic, her breathing so shallow it was almost imperceptible. Elkhorn pulled himself forward on his elbows, panting, his brown eyes wild with fear. Blood streaked his face and spattered the shells in his forelocks.
What are we gonna do? You can hear them down there. If we can't stand up to shoot at them, they'll be through in no time.
Badgertail licked his dry lips. His thoughts darted, trying to find a last-ditch strategy to buy time.
Take a third of the warriors we have left. Order half of them to dig shooting pits into the side of the Temple Mount. Tell the other half to build a barricade around the area where Pataga's forces will break through. If we can cage them and shoot down from safe positions...
It'll be like shooting netted geese. I'll do it.
Elkhorn quickly backed away and began to crawl toward the nearest warriors. Badgertail lay alone, dread throbbing in his veins. As night came on, the fires outside the palisade shone clearly. Although Pataga's warriors were tirelessly carrying water, it was not enough. The northern cornfields gleamed red-orange, while moonlight silvered the spirals of smoke rising from the devastated squash fields to the west. A thick smudge of black straggled languidly across the cloud-strewn sky. Lightning had been flickering here and there, nothing more than a vague threat of rain. Below him, warriors flitted through webs of sparkflies like nighthawks in search of mice. Pataga's attack had been relentless, brutal, throwing wave after wave at the palisades. Yet all of Pataga's warriors seemed fresh and alert.
He can afford to spell the tired and replace the wounded. I can't.
Badgertail had warriors with arm and leg wounds still at their positions, functioning as best they could. He balled a fist and slammed it repeatedly into the platform. Only when the pain drove him to stop did he look up and see Nightshade climbing the ladder toward him. Pataga leaned his shoulder against the creek bank where they had established camp. He watched ash twirl and tumble out of the sky, alighting on the tepid brown water. He tried to contain his nervousness. Clouds had moved in suddenly and blanketed the sky with a silver-tinged wall of black that reflected the flames with a torrid glory. Pataga turned to examine Hail Cloud and Spoonbill, both of whom sat beside him in the shadowed niche. Spoonbill looked on with his usual infinite patience, but Hail Cloud's jaw had set as he studied the final assault on the palisades, his fingers steepled over his mouth. The team of four had been hacking away at the palisade poles for over a hand of time, while dozens of warriors provided covering fire. Badgertail's people dared not expose themselves to that constant barrage. Those who had been so bold had fallen quickly. Farther down the bank, dark forms dipped baskets into the water, then awkwardly ran back to the fields to dump them. The Hornspoon clan had been working tirelessly, but they had been able to save only a few paltry patches of corn. The land was so dry. The flames moved with the speed of eagle.
How many people has this war left homeless? Thousands. Will they come back? I'll make them come back. I'll find a way.
Hail Cloud pointed at the small crack of light that showed through the axe hole in the palisade wall.
They're almost through, my chief. I think we should fire the buildings now.
Do you really think that Badgertail has enough warriors left to mount a defensive action when we rush through? I'd hate to burn the temple unless we have to.
Even though Theron's presence tainted it, Pataga could not help but believe that such an act would further anger the gods. The lines around Hail Cloud's eyes pulled tight.
It's never wise to underestimate Badgertail.
Then so be it. Give the order.
Hail Cloud put a hand on his son's shoulder.
Spoonbill, go and tell Basswood to begin firing the houses within the palisades. Hopefully the fires will carry sparks to the roof of the temple. If Badgertail has positioned people on the temple mound, the fire should divert their attention from us.
Yes, Father.
Spoonbill dashed away through the darkness.
A few more moments, that's all.
Excitement and fear thrilled Pataga's soul. If Theron and Badgertail had not been killed in the fighting, then Pataga would soon have them. flaming arrows arced across the blackness. Tongues of fire leaped into the sky beyond the palisade, as though possessing a malignant life of their own.
What?
Hail Cloud looked westward, down the creek. The warriors who had taken refuge along the bank suddenly rose and scattered.
What?
Hail Cloud gripped his shoulder and pulled him down again into a safe position. But Pataga's gaze kept searching. As the warriors fled, leaving an empty swath near the water, he thought he saw a long robe dancing in the wind. A figure loomed out of the darkness and glided toward them soundlessly.
Who is that?
Pataga frowned. He could see in the firelight that it was a woman, tall and willowy. Long black hair hung in a midnight wealth over her shoulders and framed her full lips and turned-up nose. She bore a beautiful cedar box under one arm. Pataga's heart almost burst. He leaped up, threw off Hail Cloud's hand, and ran.
Nightshade!
Pataga?
Pataga fell at her feet and hugged her around the legs, as he had when he was a child and frightened of the dark. He desperately kissed the hand that had lowered to touch his hair.
Oh, Nightshade! I knew you were alive. I knew you were helping us. I knew you wouldn't turn against me.
Your family gave me a home when I had none. I couldn't turn against you, my chief.
Pataga had never heard her call him by his new title, and the words sounded so magnificent on her lips that he smiled up at her radiantly.
How did you get away? Did Theron...
Theron is dead, Pataga. Badgertail sent me to you to try to end this killing.
Hail Cloud had rushed up to stand behind Pataga.
Theron dead? Why?
He committed sacrilege. Incest.
Pataga rose to his feet, searching Nightshade's black eyes.
Incest? With who?
His daughter.
Orenda? But she's a little girl. Blessed Father, Son. My poor cousin.
Pataga had never met Orenda, but he knew the requirement that ritual law would place upon him. To right the sacrilege, he would have to obliterate all memory of Orenda and her father. Pataga lowered his eyes and shook his head.
Pataga, Badgertail wants to surrender. He...
What? Surrender? I won't let him. These are the men and women who murdered our village, Nightshade. I want them dead.
Nightshade stepped closer as she put a graceful hand on Pataga's cheek.
You have won the war, my chief. Now save what's left of this village. You need a foundation on which to build your new chiefdom. The farmers, artisans, and merchants here have the knowledge needed to help you. And Badgertail believes that his warriors will be loyal to the next Sun Chief, whoever that may be.
Do you believe it?
Yes. My chief, the time has come to cleanse and heal.
Riddled with conflicting emotions, Pataga walked a few paces away from her and stood at the edge of the water. A dark oval lay on the opposite shore. He squinted, and in the sudden livid flaring of the temple roof as sparks ignited it, he saw that the oval was a corpse sprawled among charred weeds. The face had been burned beyond recognition. Anger roiled in Pataga's belly. His need for revenge battled like a rabid wildcat with his understanding that Nightshade was right. He needed the Cahokia clans, all of them. Despite all of the death and despair he had seen in recent weeks, and all of the difficult decisions he had had to make, only now, when faced with the challenge of being either merciful or spiteful, did he feel like a man. Pataga bowed his head, studying the obscene film of ash that bobbed on the dark surface of the water. In his dreams, he had been returning again and again to his father during the last moments at River Mounds. He saw his father standing calm and erect, serene with the dignity of his office, no matter that his life was threatened. Nightshade had faithfully advised his father, and his father had trusted her judgment implicitly. The rear part of the temple roof erupted in a ball of flame. People stood transfixed, watching in awe as the rolling gouts of fire billowed into the sky, scorching the very clouds. And then, part of the high roof collapsed. The gaudy light bleached the faces of the warriors struggling at the base of the palisades.
Pataga?
Nightshade offered the box.
There is something else. Badgertail asked me to bring you your father's head. He asked that it be returned to the body so that Gino's spirit can walk with pride in the underworld.
Pataga started to reach for the box and stopped himself. His muscles trembled as he remembered that last encouraging look his father had given him before Badger Tail struck.
If Badger Tail thinks...
It is his belief that you will torture him to death. He accepts that.
Mataga reverently took the box. As he did so, rain pattered out of the sky, splatting in the bone-dry dust. In only a moment, the drops turned into a heavy downpour that drenched the world in an impenetrable wall of water. Mataga stood in numb confusion, letting the rain soak him to the core. It soothed like cool salve on an aching burn. He lifted his eyes and saw Nightshade climbing the creek bank to the charred terrace. Her red dress clung to her body like a second skin, hanging in drenched folds. When she spread her arms to the storm, lightning danced like a thousand spark flies through the clouds and bathed her in amber splendor.
She's done it! First woman listened!
Everywhere, warriors stopped in the middle of knocking arrows to stare in disbelief at the torrent that spilled from the clouds. The ground had begun to shine with a thick, downy sheen where water pooled. Nightshade lowered her arms.
Pataga, what shall I tell Badger Tail?
Tell him yes. I'll accept his surrender. But that applies only to his warriors and the villagers. He is another question.
Tears welling to mix with rain, Pataga lowered himself to his knees on the slick mud. With trembling fingers, he stroked the carved surface of the rain-shiny box that lay before him. Lightning spun an eerie, luminescent web around Wanderer and Vole, where they sat beneath a worn buffalo hide at the base of the temple mound. Lycan lay wrapped in a blanket between them, still, quiet. Even when he and Vole had lifted the edges of Lycan's blanket and dashed out of the burning temple, she hadn't made a sound. Her hair spread in a wet veil over the blanket. Wanderer reached down to touch her head. The swelling had gone down quickly, and he had sewn the flap of skin back into place just before the temple caught fire. She seemed to be breathing easier. Wanderer leaned forward and put his mouth close to the flap.
Lycan, can you hear me? It's Wanderer. It's raining here. The war has stopped. Tell First Woman we send our thanks.
Her soul's gone, Wanderer. She can't hear you.
Oh, you'd be amazed at what the soul can hear when you've got an extra hole in your head.
The temple blaze still cast a lurid halo over the plaza. As the interior walls caught and burned, the flames illuminated the rivulets of water that slithered across the chunky field like quicksilver serpents. Against the temple's pale yellow glow, warriors stood silhouetted along the shooting platforms. Their hands spread, they warily scrutinized the Taga's jubilant warriors, who raced around confiscating weapons.
Wanderer, when will Lycan's soul come back to us?
Wanderer saw the fear in Vol's eyes and patted her hand tenderly, then tugged on the thong around Lycan's neck to pull the stone wolf out on top of the blanket. It gleamed a reddish orange in the light of the fire. As Wanderer stared at it, he felt its power radiating out, forming an invisible net around Lycan. Wanderer leaned back and closed his eyes, gazing at the net with his soul. It shone blue, pale blue, and glistened like a spider's web covered with dew on a cool spring morning. Joy crept through the strands, reaching for him like a weak hand.
Soon, Vol. She's on her way back. I don't know, Nightshade. I'm not sure she'll want to.
Wanderer picked his way through the smoldering remains of the temple. Morning sunlight streamed between the charred poles, painting Nightshade's beautiful face with slashes of gold as she stepped over the rubble of a collapsed wall.
Well, it's up to her. But I think that Pataga will need her help very badly. All of the people will. Could you talk to her about it?
Yes, of course.
Nightshade put her basket on the blackened ground and crouched to examine the ashes, as if looking for something. A few hands away, Orenda sat cross-legged beside a blanket-enshrouded Lycan. Still weak, Lycan could stay awake for only a few hands of time, but her cheeks had grown rosy again, and the sparkle had re-entered her eyes.
So First Woman told you that humans could live here for a little while longer?
Yes, but she didn't say for how long. She told me she would watch and wait. If humans keep hurting Mother Earth, First Woman said she would force us to leave.
Where will she make us go?
South, to the Swamp People's lands. First Woman said...
But there are huge snakes there. I heard a trader talking once. He told me the snakes were so big that they could swallow a child whole.
That's just the kind of place First Woman would send humans. She's not very happy with us.
Orenda frowned. Then suddenly a smile lit her face.
You know what, Lycan?
Eagerly, Orenda got on her knees and leaned closer to Lycan.
I'm going south. Nightshade's taking me, but not to the Swamp People's lands.
Wanderer knelt beside Nightshade, studying the care with which she searched the ashes. Her fingertips brushed the blackened remains of the cattail mats that had once graced Theron's floor.
What are you looking for?
They've been calling me. When the fire reached this room, I could hear them screaming my name.
Who?
The bundles, necklaces, and other power objects that Theron stole.
I don't hear them.
That's because they're not calling you.
Nightshade's hand stopped moving. Her fingers tightened around something, and she drew an iron-covered human jaw from the ashes. The iron had been pounded into a thin sheet, then wrapped around the bone. Wanderer leaned forward to peer at the place where she had found it. The mummified body of a dog, a puppy, lay beside a stone pallet stained with red paint. Nightshade gathered the remains and put them in her basket.
Don't worry. We're going away.
Nightshade stood up and closed her eyes, letting her soul lead her to the next place. Wanderer followed. Nightshade stepped around a toppled bench, knelt, and gently blew away the ash blanketing a large soapstone pipe. The face of Otter stared up at her, carved expertly from the soft green stone. Inside the bowl of the pipe were two fishhooks and a stone net sinker.
The things bundles remember. I wonder who they were.
Nightshade stroked Otter's side fondly.
People of the sea. I can smell the salt in the air, just like the traders describe. And I hear...
They both turned. Orenda had placed her ear atop Lycan's head, over the bald spot where Wanderer had taken out the circle of skull.
Do you hear it?
Yes. That's First Woman's drum.
She told me that I would always be able to hear her playing my death song to remind me of how I got falcon's wings.
You had to die? She killed you?
No. My spirit helper, Birdman, tore me apart with his beak and swallowed me.
I don't think I want him for my spirit helper.
Oh, it was all right. I needed him to kill me. When he pecked away my head, I grew bird eyes, and then I could see the road of light that ties the sky to the earth.
Lycan turned to smile at Wanderer, and his heart warmed. She had changed. Power radiated from her. He could see it in every move she made. Nightshade rose and took a step forward to watch the line of people climbing the steps of the temple mound. Meadowvole led the way, a little boy hot on her heels, taking the steps two at a time. When they reached the top of the mound, the boy broke into a headlong run.
Flycatcher! Lycan! Lycan!
Flycatcher raced across the charred grass to throw his arms around her. Lycan feebly hugged him back.
Oh, Flycatcher, what happened to you?
We went up and hid in that hole where you and Wanderer talked to the rocks. We stayed there for 2 days with no food or water. Then we sneaked away in the middle of the night.
Wanderer walked through the burned debris and stood beside Vol. She smiled up at him.
Vol, we must talk. Nightshade is leaving. She wants Lycan to stay on as Pataga's priestess.
Locust set another log into the ground trench she had dug for their new house, then caved dirt in around the base to keep the log in place. Primrose walked toward her, dragging another log down the path that led through the gutted village outside the palisades. His long hair glinted blue-black in the sunshine. He had been wearing the same yellow dress for 3 days, but it still looked clean and fresh. He seemed almost well again. Nightshade had sent a healing poultice that drew the infection from the flesh. Locust had forced Primrose to use it first. Then, when his wounds started to heal, she had placed it on her own leg. Today, for the first time, she could walk without pain. Locust took a breath and gazed around at her new world. Fire-blackened wall poles thrust up everywhere, like jagged, rotting teeth. People swarmed across the rubble, searching for the few belongings that might have survived the blazes, calling out the names of missing family members. A very old man stood beside a mound of charred debris.
Pataka says she didn't mean to burn the village beyond the palisades, but look at this! This was my home! What will I do now? Where can an old man go?
Primrose's face saddened as he threw the end of the log into the fire a dozen hands from Locust. Sparks spiraled upward into the late afternoon sky. In another finger of time, he would remove the log and give it to her to sink into the trench.
Who would have thought things could get so bad that we would be reusing wood?
But the log would finish one wall of their new house. Their old house, like so many others, had been demolished in the fighting. Early that morning, they had sifted through the wreckage and collected what little they could find of their precious life together. Locust turned back to her work. Picking up a stalk of cane, she wove it between the logs to add strength to the wall. Freshly cut saplings would have worked better, but there weren't any. Dressed only in a blue and tan kilt, she had been working tirelessly to suppress the futility that weighted her soul. She could have stood losing the battle for Cahokia, agonizing though it might be. But just over there, beyond the walls of the palisade, Badgertail was tied up, surrounded by guards, and she had been unable to do anything to help him. Primrose gave Locust a soft glance as he knelt and turned the log, making certain that it charred evenly.
I saw him in the plaza. I think he's all right.
When is the torture ceremony scheduled to begin?
No one has heard. I asked all of the guards around the palisades. I don't think Pataga has decided.
For a moment, Locust couldn't move. Memories of Badgertail rose within her like morning mist off Marsh Elder Lake, weaving images from the past in her head. Her soul overlaid the bittersweet memories with those of the present. Badgertail striding confidently through a village at her side. Badgertail smiling at her across a campfire. Badgertail strung up like a dead animal, waiting to be gutted. Alone. All alone. Locust squeezed her eyes closed.
Locust?
I can't talk about it. Not yet, Primrose.
Guilt smothered her, its power so great that she felt that if she didn't do something, her soul would die. She lurched to her feet, pulled her war club from her belt, and slammed it into the new wall. Mustering all of her strength, she hit the wall again and again, swinging her club from side to side as though cutting a swath through a wave of enemy warriors. The hot tears flooding her cheeks made her hate herself for being so weak, for not being able to save Badgertail. Primrose ran up and stood behind her.
Locust, please don't do this to yourself. There's nothing you could have done.
Finally, the despair drained her strength. She let the club fall to the ground, then sank against the wall and leaned her forehead against the cool logs.
I'm going to organize the warriors. There are some who will follow me. We'll get him out. I just have to figure a way of distracting.
Locust, Pataga has 1,000 warriors. 400 are walking the shooting platforms, watching everyone who comes or goes through the palisades. You could gather maybe a handful of warriors. None of you would live long enough to get near Badgertail. Badgertail made peace. He knew what he was doing.
No! Offering himself in exchange for us was crazy. I would have rather died at his side than live through this.
Locust turned, and Primrose hugged her desperately. For a blessed, timeless moment, Locust let herself drown in the comfort of his arms, the smooth, steady rhythm of his breathing, the feel of his hand stroking her hair.
I can't let him die, Primrose.
He'd be terrifying, you know, if he suspected that you might try to rescue him. He's offered himself so that those men and women who've been loyal to him could live. And he loves you, Locust. He always has. He would want to know that his life bought your safety.
Locust's heart pounded, knowing that Primrose was right, hating to admit it. She leaned her cheek on his shoulder and stared hollowly at the scorched fields across Cahokia Creek. Nothing would ever be the same. Half of the population had fled or been killed. Sandbar had led the Squash Blossom clan away on the night the fighting began, and now refused to return. Checkerberry, poor Checkerberry, had been injured when a burning roof collapsed on top of her. She lay in Green Ash's home, coughing up blood, moaning in despair about Green Ash's twins. Locust, too, wondered what would happen to the babies if Checkerberry died. Nit was taking care of them now, but if Green Ash became clan leader, no one would be able to protect the children.
Will Green Ash give them away? Or order one of her relatives to bash their brains out? Perhaps offer them as ritual companions to be strangled the next time a powerful Sunborn dies?
I love you, Logan. I need you. Maybe we should leave for a few days, stay away until the torture is over.
No. No, I have to see Badgertail again. Even if Pataga won't let me speak to him. Tomorrow. I'll go tomorrow when I can stand it.
A bright, hot day. So hot. Badgertail hung limply on the rack in the center of the plaza, staring up at his hands tied over his head. For 4 days, Father Sun had been tormenting him, sucking every drop of moisture from his naked body, roasting Badgertail's skin with brilliant yellow rays. Sweat poured down his face, stinging his eyes and occasionally blinding him to the happenings around him. People crowded the plaza, scavenging through the husks of houses for anything that might be usable. Some came just to stare at Badgertail. A few, very few, came to spit on him and curse him for having lost the war. In the past hand of time, Badgertail had begun to shake. Not from fear, but from the deprivation of food and water for the 3rd day in a row. His tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth like a withered root, and his belly roiled with sickness.
Just get it over with, Pataga. At this rate, I won't have the strength to die bravely, and you'll have very little entertainment from me.
He struggled to get his feet under him so he could ease the unbearable pain that lanced his back. Pataga glanced over from where he sat on a fabric-covered bench 20 hands away, listening to the complaints of the villagers. Badgertail had watched the people come and go, begging remuneration for crop losses, pleading for corn to feed their children, or if they were starborn, just complaining that Theron had waged a war without consulting them first.
Theron, may your soul be lost forever on the dark river in the underworld.
Hurts, does it, Badgertail?
Badgertail saw Hailcloud bow his head and stare at the ground as though he felt ill.
Think of how my father felt.
Your father felt nothing, Sun Chief. I had a great deal of respect for your father. I made certain that he never suffered.
You won't feel anything either when the time comes. But I don't think that will be for a few days.
Days? Blessed Moon Maiden.
Badgertail fought to lock his knees.
Who's next? Hurry up, there are others waiting.
Locust carried a basket. Badgertail's heart ached, knowing how much it would hurt her to see him like this. He gave her a weak smile as she limped forward. Anguish lined her pointed face, puckering her warrior's tattoos. She tried to stop to talk to him.
No one speaks to the prisoner. Step forward, Locust.
Badgertail's gaze held Locust's for a few moments longer. Long enough that a lump built in his throat at the love and grief he saw in her eyes. Then she limped forward to stand beside Primrose and set the basket down at Pataga's sandaled feet.
What's this?
Sun Chief, these babies have no family or clan. Checkerberry, their great aunt and former leader of the Blue Blanket clan, was killed in the war. The new clan leader, Green Ash, and the mother of these children has disowned them. What will you have us do with them?
Pataga looked horrified. He leaned forward to peer into the basket, his golden robe stirring around his feet.
No one wants these babies, but that's unthinkable. Surely you can find someone.
No, Sun Chief. After these boys were banished from our clan, my wife, Primrose, and I searched throughout the village, seeking to give them to the other clans. No one wanted them.
But why not?
Locust gingerly knelt down and unwrapped each of the bundles to expose the babies. Badgertail blinked, thinking his blurry vision responsible for the terrors he saw before him. But when his eyes cleared, his horror worsened. One of the children had no arms. Only fingers protruded from the stumps at his shoulders. And the other? He seemed to be looking directly at Badgertail through wide pink eyes. And something about those eyes was so powerful. They assailed anyone who had the courage to look into them, as though this boy had the soul of a creature foreign to his people and their world. Thick white hair clung to the child's skull, framing a face with a mouth that protruded so far that it appeared to be a snout.
If none of the clans will have them, Locust, there's nothing I can do.
Locust rose to her feet resignedly.
Very well, Sun Chief. I will find someone to take them out and leave them for the wolves. I was hoping we could...
I want them.
People whirled to stare. Then they pointed. Nightshade approached with a liquid grace, her head high, her eyes on Pataga. Badgertail craned his neck to watch. Orenda walked at Nightshade's side. The little girl grinned happily, as if oblivious to the stares of loathing. People shuffled backwards so quickly that they stumbled over one another, many of them making warding signs with their fingers. Nightshade had rejected the red color of the Starborn for a blue dress, woven from the finest dogbane thread. Badgertail stared unabashedly. He had never seen her wear anything but red since the day he'd delivered her to Old Marmot 20 cycles ago. Her long hair hung down the middle of her back in a glistening braid. A beautifully carved shell gorget lay suspended over her heart. Nightshade knelt by Pataga's feet to refold the blankets over the babies and pick up the basket. Orenda continued to smile, her eyes focused on someplace far away, as if she lived a dream. Badgertail swallowed hard. Poor Orenda. On her head lay the guilt of incest. People muttered behind their hands, pointing at the child, scowling. Cahokia would never rest until her screaming body was thrown on a burning pyre alongside Theron's. Pataga averted his eyes from the tainted Orenda.
But, Nightshade, what will you do with two babies?
They're going home with me, where they belong.
Home?
As the words sank in, Pataga lunged to his feet and stared imploringly into her dark eyes.
Nightshade, you don't mean...
Yes, I do, Pataga. My work here is done. Power has its own needs. Orenda and I are leaving tomorrow.
Badgertail felt as though his aching body had received the first death thrust from a lance.
Fool. She has always wanted to go back. You knew she wouldn't stay.
It didn't matter anyway. He would be dead soon.
Burn the child! She's polluted! Her father's semen runs in her womb!
Pataga stood, his mouth open, suddenly looking like a frightened little boy.
Leave? With Orenda? You can't! I mean, Orenda must die, must be purified.
Burn her!
Cleanse the pollution!
Pataga backed up a step, his uneasy eyes darting from Orenda to the crowd. The smile died on Orenda's lips. Her chin quivered as she looked up at Nightshade. Nightshade's eyes seemed to grow, dark pools that sucked at the soul.
Orenda goes with me.
Pataga shook his head, rubbing his hands on his golden robe as if they had gone sweaty.
You know the laws against incest, Nightshade. The people are right. The girl must be burned. From the beginning time, First Woman instructed...
You will have to kill me first, Sun Chief. Your club lies behind you. Raise it. Strike.
Let Aranda go! I've been there. Being condemned to the forbidden lands of the palace builders is the same as death. Maybe worse.
Worse than death?
Yes, take her. But she must never return.
Pataga faced the crowd, lifting his arms.
I banish my cousin Aranda to the forbidden lands of the palace builders. Her feet will not pollute the lands of our ancestors ever again.
One less victim for Theron.
When Pataga turned back to Nightshade, he gestured weakly.
Take her, Nightshade. But I don't know what I'll do without you.
Nightshade set her basket down so she could embrace Pataga. Aranda protectively clutched the basket's handle, eyes lowered to avoid the glares from the people.
Oh, Nightshade. I'll miss you. I need you now more than I ever have.
No, you don't. You just don't realize it yet. I've seen your future. You'll have a priestess who is much greater than I am, if you'll ask her to stay.
Who?
Lycan.
Who?
We'll discuss it tonight. I've arranged for you and me to take dinner with Meadowvole, Wanderer, and Lycan.
Then, as though Badgertail's intense gaze drew her, Nightshade walked across the dirt and stood before him. She studied his eyes, probing so deeply that it felt like a fishhook ripping at his soul.
So, my kidnapper, do you still believe a bear is a bear?
Are you asking if I believe that it's the nature of my soul and my duty to be a warrior? It is no longer my duty, priestess. But whether or not it is still my nature, I can't say.
What is your duty now?
My duty is to die as well as I can, for the sake of my warriors. And if Pataga doesn't hurry, I may fail even at that.
Nightshade stepped closer to Badgertail, so close that he could smell the sweet scent of mint that rose from her hair. When his heart started pounding, he made a futile effort to straighten his body.
Badgertail, I would have you grab your pack and run away with me.
The words echoed around a familiar chasm in his soul. Desperate longing surged through him.
I would run away with you, Nightshade.
She turned without a word, striding through the onlookers to pull the hafted chert knife from Hailcloud's belt. Hailcloud cast an inquiring look at Pataga, who shook his head in confusion. Hailcloud made no move to stop her. Nightshade raised the knife over Badgertail's head and cut his bonds. He fell to his knees, and his arms struck his sides like slabs of dead meat. Nightshade knelt beside him and slipped an arm around his shoulders, supporting him until he could shift into a sitting position.
Are you all right?
Nightshade lifted her commanding gaze to Pataga.
Badgertail is also going home with me tomorrow, my chief.
I've never heard that story. How do you know it?
The sweet fragrance of bullthistle filled the air as Lycan walked along the terrace of Cahokia Creek behind Wanderer. He had been toying with the fringe on his green shirt, studying the thistle's magenta blossoms, or just gazing longingly up at the transparent bands of cloud that streaked the deep blue sky. Not even a breath of wind stirred the weeds this evening.
First Woman told it to me. She said that Wolfslayer almost died. He had to jump across the spiny backs of the ice giants while he fought Grandfather White Bear. That's how he tricked Bear. Wolfslayer sneaked down onto a ledge in a deep crevice in the ice. Bear sniffed him out and tried to follow, but he slipped and fell to his death. Then Wolfslayer cut off Bear's hide for a robe and his claws for his spirit necklace.
Like the claw that First Woman gave you. I was surprised when you woke with it in your hand.
First Woman said she hoped it would always remind me.
Remind you?
Yes, of what Wolfslayer had to go through to find the hole that led to this world of light.
Lycan, have you decided whether you'll stay here or not? Pataga needs you badly. I think your mother wants you to stay, too.
Do you want me to?
If it's what you want, I'll miss you. I was hoping that maybe you'd come back to my rock shelter and live with me. You're young, and power is so unpredictable. Living here in this big village will be far different than living in Redweed. I'm afraid it will be hard for you.
Unconsciously, Lycan's hand moved from the stone wolf on its thong around her neck, then down to her new power bundle, which was tied to the belt of her purple dress. It contained the huge bear claw, as well as the bits of hair and skull that Wanderer had cut from her head.
It's like crossing a mountain. The climb is hard. You can't understand anything about the whole world until you see the other side. This is another step on the way to ultimate dreaming power.
Lycan leaned over and sniffed at the wet scents of water and mud. Down in the creek, two turtles paddled along the shore, sneaking up on insects.
Wanderer, do you know what? When I was in the underworld, I thought I could hear your voice. It sounded like the wind.
Oh, that's because I cut that hole in your head, and I could talk directly to your soul. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of voices you hear now that you have two holes in the top of your head. I've never known anybody with two.
Maybe that's why I keep hearing the corn and squash talking to me.
Wanderer glanced at her, then lifted his gaze to the new sprouts of green that dotted the burned fields.
What are they saying?
They want to know when there will be more rain. I said it would come tonight.
How do you know?
Thunderbird told me.
Wanderer nodded mildly. Since she had gotten Falcon's soul, Thunderbird talked to her all the time, his deep voice rumbling through her head. Wanderer's eyes suddenly narrowed. Lycan turned to see what he was looking at. Coils of black smoke rose into the still air above Cahokia.
Kettle told me that people have been arriving for 2 days to watch the cremation. They've already started spinning legends about him. Wicked ones, I hope.
Lycan leaned her head back and stared up at the sky. As Father Sun sank lower on the horizon, crimson streaks shot into the hearts of the wisps of cloud, turning them into blazing spirals. They couldn't bury Theron in the ground, because that would have offended Mother Earth, and they couldn't give him a platform burial, because Father Sun would have been outraged. Burning him was the only way to be rid of his polluted body.
How long did First Woman say that humans could stay here, Lycan? Did she give you an idea?
She didn't say, not for certain. Only that she would be watching us closely.
Well, I hope Pataga runs what's left of the chiefdom better than Theron did. Huh?
Suddenly, Wanderer skipped sideways, pointing.
What's that?
It's just a weasel hole, Wanderer.
Oh, I thought I saw him sneaking up on me.
Weasel would be silly if he bothered you, Wanderer. I have Prairie Falcon's soul.
A great weight seemed to lift from Wanderer's shoulders. Lycan smiled and drew a perfect spiral into the ground with the toe of her sandal.
Wanderer, I think I have to stay here to help Pataga. Can't you stay with me? Maybe just for a while until I get used to things?
Wanderer gave her a soft look that broke her heart and patted her shoulder.
I'll stay for as long as power will let me.
Cautiously, Wanderer glanced back at the weasel hole. Nightshade moved silently, sensually, on her bed of pine duff, oblivious to the children playing in the pinyon grove near the drainage. The perfumes of juniper and pine rode the hot wind that swept through the trees. She smoothed her hands over Badgertail's muscular back, reveling in the bulging muscles, gently touching each well-known tattoo. His hand crept slowly down her bare side, stroking tenderly. Streaks of golden light wove through the branches, dappling their faces.
We really ought to be down there helping the children gather pine nuts.
Badgertail braced himself on his elbows and stared at her through warm brown eyes. He had let his hair grow out, and it draped around her face in a silver-shot black curtain.
Arenda is watching the boys. They'll do fine by themselves. Besides, the pine nuts aren't going anywhere. They'll be there tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Oh, you've grown lazy, my kidnapper.
He absently toyed with a lock of her hair while his eyes caressed the magnificent wind-sculpted red buttes that lined the vista. Jaybirds hopped from branch to branch.
Yes. Thank you for that.
Down in the pinyon grove, Nightshade saw Orenda and the boys playing, chasing each other through the trees. Born of Water couldn't see very well through his pink eyes, but he could run like the wolf he resembled so much. Homegoing Boy had to be more careful. With his stubby arms, he had trouble keeping his balance on the uneven footing. He lagged behind Orenda and Born of Water, but a broad smile split his 3 summers-old face. Badgertail brushed his lips over Nightshade's ear.
I love you, my priestess.
She wrapped her arms around him and kissed him with all of the passion he had kindled in her soul, leisurely, as though they had hands of time to play. She felt him smile. Up in the trees, the jaybirds burst into flight, circling the pines, their blue wings flashing in the glory of the sun.
North America's Forgotten Past, People of the River, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1992 by W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Narrated by Nanette Savard, with Gregory Gorton as Badgertail, Christopher Graybill as Wanderer, Margie Tompros as Lycan, Alyssa Wilmoth as Locust, and Colleen Delaney, Julianne Elliott, Nick DePinto, Yasmin Twazon, Danny Gavigan, James Konacek, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Michael John Casey, Tim Getman, Lily Beacon, Terrence Aselford, Christopher Sheeran, Kimberly Gilbert, Richard Rowan, Thomas Keegan, Alexander Strain, Anastasia Wilson, Tim Carlin, Johan Detweiler, Larissa Gallagher, Joe Brack, Thomas Penny, James Lewis, Nathaniel Perry, Elizabeth Jernigan, and Michael Glenn. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. Additional music by Dan Sondak and Matt Webb. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed North America's Forgotten Past, be sure to look for Rogue Angel, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Where'd he get him?
Before he passed out. Pearly said it got him twice. Once in the leg and once in the neck.
When Smoke's friend and longtime foreman Pearly is bitten by a deadly mountain rattler, Smoke must venture into a dodgy gold rush city known as Payday.
What's wrong with your friend? He shot or something?
No, he's been snake bit real bad. We came here looking for a doctor.
The nearest real doctor's up in Pueblo, about 50 miles from here.
Damn.
I bet we do got us a dentist, and he takes care of most of our doctoring when we need it.
But when Smoke gets Pearly the only aid he can find, he crosses paths with someone from his past. Someone hell-bent on revenge.
How long you gonna let this Jensen thing distract you, Buck? Every day you sit around here messing around with this Pearly character trying to get to Jensen, we're losing money.
I'm gonna do whatever it takes to first make Jensen's life a living hell, Jeb, and then I'm gonna kill him. If you don't like it, there ain't nothing you can do about it.
But the only thing this oily varmint didn't count on was Smoke Jensen's boiling, unstoppable wrath.
Now, I don't know what you have against me, Tolliver, or why you've gone to so much trouble to hurt my friend, but I'll find out sooner or later, and we'll have a reckoning, you and me. You do know, don't you, Buck, that only one of us is leaving this town alive.
The streets run red in the Mountain Man number 32, Wrath of the Mountain Man. Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.